Hello, everyone. Another thank you for Mr. Brent Jones. He will be joining us again later after the chit chat. Let me introduce myself. I'm Tammy Kegley. Some of you know me from around town. Paige and I moved back to London a few years ago. And part of our introduction into the music scene was working with Howie at the amazing festival, the Close to the Edge Festival at Springbank Park a few years back. And that's where we really got to meet so many of the community. It was a really, really special time. Have bonded with many of you over music, various music venues all over town, and it makes us happy. My partner Paige and I were trying to figure out how we fit in. I'm a lifelong artist. I've been a working artist all my life. I've been a performing artist. I've been a professional dancer. I've been a visual artist. I got my BFA in art down south. And it's just something I've done all my life. I haven't done this particular thing in a few years. I've been an arts journalist. I've contributed to the PBS station in San Antonio, where we lived before we returned to Canada a few years ago. So there's a little bit of everything. And art and the way it brings people together is our love. Paige has a background in, he attended the Western University and got his degree from there back in the dark ages of the 80s, was a DJ, and he dabbled in that a bit when we came back to town. He's been involved in arts journalism, so how do we bring what we do to the community? How do we add to what's going on? InsideOutsideLondon.ca is a brand new website. And with that website, we hope to shine a light on the visual arts, a place where all the visual arts can come together. We have been talking about doing a live conversation, and we've been talking about it for a while. Literally, a few weeks ago, Paige finally said, look, I'm gonna call Mark, and I'm gonna see if he's interested in this for the Richmond. It was a swing. We didn't know that it would be right for here. When Mark said, tell me more, and opened the doors for us to do this, we couldn't have been more excited. So this has come together very quickly. As we say in the restaurant and bar business, this is our soft opening. Okay? So I appreciate all of you coming out and joining us to play tonight. We'll be doing this every third Thursday from 6 to 8. Always a different conversation, always a different musical guest, and I hope that you find it as interesting as we do. So thank you. Right now, I'd like to introduce you to my guest. She's a mover and a shaker. When I met her here a few months back, it was just totally random. We were at open mic night and sat down, and there was this amazing woman, funny as hell. We were having a great conversation. It's like, yeah, who is this? Very soon discovered I was talking to Jamie Fenton, who happens to be Mark's better half. And so some of you know Jamie from here. Come on up, Jamie. Jamie is head of operations at Museum London and visitor experience. But prior to that, if you have kiddos and you went to museum, the Children's Museum, she was a longtime employee there and brought her energy to that space. So we're going to have a conversation, Jamie.
I'm ready.
All right, well, let's sit down.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to grab something wet to drink because
I know a guy, Mark. Are you able to grab us?
Here comes a guy.
Paige is great too. Hired.
Hello.
Wonderful.
Thank you. All right, so let's have a chat.
Excellent. Thank you.
My hour, Donata. When we think about the art scene, a lot of us are very accustomed to it. A lot of us are not. Very often, galleries and museums are presented as elevated spaces. Folks aren't quite sure that they belong there. Or they look at the art and they say, I don't get it. What the hell am I looking at? And that's fair. That's okay. It's okay to love it. It's okay to hate it, because that's eliciting a human response. So what I want to talk with Jamie about today is her approach to the arts and what makes Jamie Fenton tick.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for having me. And when we first sat down to explore this conversation, I had said to Tammy, I am not the person that you want for this interview or this conversation. I do not have a fine arts degree. I do not come from a traditional way of being in the art sector. I come from a lifelong love of the arts, and more than just the visual arts, also music, drama, dance, was something that was very prevalent in my life growing up. Right here in London, Ontario, and then over to Beale with the Beale Musical Theatre and Arts Program. And then starting off my career, I had been teaching for Original Kids for a very long time. I was a choreographer, a director for some of their shows. I wanted to do my own thing. So I wanted to incorporate arts programming for children and families in a unique space. And that's when I opened my first studio. So I had a studio out in Westminster Ponds called Art on a Limb, where we used to host school programs, do a mom and baby wild child program that I piloted there. And that's where it really began. And once I started my own family, I realized that maybe owning my own studio was not going to help pay the bills. So.
This is something I totally did not know.
Yes,
I did
so
not
sorry.
Know you were a choreographer and a dancer, etc., etc. Something else we have in common.
Right.
That's outrageous.
So then I quickly moved into community programming. Community has always been the heart of what I see as opportunity for the city. And accessible community programming. So working for the Child and Youth Network for the City of London, initiating programs to help drive conversations between parents and caregivers, but then leading to big community projects and initiatives. So that was kind of post-children working for the city in community programming, but in a very accessible way. So starting off building family centers that are now scattered throughout the City of London, and weaving in literacy-rich programming right through that from the very get-go.
So what kind of changes, working with children and their families in the arts, what kind of changes did you see happen right before your eyes when you were working with kids and families this way?
That's a really great question, because the word literacy really, it can be intimidating to folks. But everyone knows how to pick up a pencil and to smear color on a paper. So what we really focused on is arts-based programming for children, youth, and families that was really collaborative with the parent voice. Because what we knew in communities is that the more that you speak to your children, the more they're able to learn and grow and build their literacy skills. For a family that doesn't have the means or the time or the capacity to be able to focus on direct literacy skills, art was the avenue. So that was the way that I kind of started off that journey, is saying, let's focus on something that everyone knows how to do. Everyone can create. There's no real need to a start and a finish or a predetermined product at the end of it. It's about the process. And within that process, there's so many more things that you can get with programming than just the finished result.
Well, yeah, and you talk about hooking up literacy with art. You don't have to share a language, importantly. You don't have to share a language in order to share art, or to share the feelings that art brings, or to be able to tell your story, whether that story is a sad story or a happy story, just getting those feelings out and communicating is so important.
Yes, I agree. So now here's the tie to the museum sector. As a child who grew up with not a lot, so things were really tight in our household. Creativity was at the base of everything that we did in our home. My mom was a single parent who did not have a job, who lived for my sister and I, and we would walk out to our garden and she would say, I wonder what we can make with this. We would be walking through the forest and we would find things and treasures and we would collect them and we would go home to make a special mosaic or art project and she'd say, I wonder what we can make with this today. Museums were not accessible to us as children, and I know that all of the wonderful museums and institutions that we have in our city have these accessibility programs to this day, but for my mom, she never thought that she could go and access those services. So for me, in being involved with the community and the city and the London Children's Museum, my sole purpose was getting the kids that were not coming to the Children's Museum. The parents that were bringing their kids had already bought in. They already knew what benefits they were going to get from arts and community and culture. It was my mission, essentially, to go and find those kids that are in the cracks, that were not going and getting services. So that was really what I did over those 6.5, almost 7 years at the Children's Museum, was create and establish programming to get kids and meet them where they're at and bring science and art to the community.
How challenging was that? Because like you said, those who have bought in, they feel an ownership in the community programs. They perhaps had art forward as an important part of growing up. How difficult was it to find those kids? Because I know they're everywhere.
They are everywhere. It wasn't difficult to find the kids. It was difficult to show the parents how easy it could be for them. So oftentimes I would launch a program in a co-op. So I would bring all of my supplies and pack up the car and bring everything that they need to do an art project or a science project and show up in a low-income co-op and set it up for them. So the parents don't have to worry about transportation. They didn't have to worry about trying to figure out or signing onto a registration or any of the barriers that can happen for families. It was already available to them. And then when they brought their kids, that's when I could kind of explain to them a little bit more about, hey, we have a free family fun night. We can provide you with bus tickets. There's also a meal cupboard there. We can grab supplies if you'd like. And really just letting them know that the museum is for everyone and it's for them as well. And then when I saw this amazing posting for Museum London, it was at a really unique time in my career. I had just finished the design process of the brand new Children's Museum at 100 Kellogg, and we were right into the implementation phase of this. And I felt like I had really put my mark on how programs and services would be at our new home at 100 Kellogg. And I saw this posting for Museum London, and again, I thought of that little kid, and I thought of my mom, who had never taken me to Museum London. It was just not accessible to her. And I just don't even know how I would feel taking my own kids, where you're worried about them touching something or interacting with something or being too loud. And I thought, I know museums now well enough that art is for everyone, and I am going to apply for this position and probably weird them out by all of the crazy ideas that I have to increase the visitor experience. And just share with them my passion in making museums accessible.
So how many other applicants did you have to beat up to get this job?
I heard there were a lot. I heard there were a lot. And at one point, I said to my partner, I said, I don't think they want me. I don't know if they're ready for me yet. You know, Museum London's been going through some amazing transitions through new leadership with Julie Bevan coming in and coming on board. And
she's just been there, what, a couple of years now?
Yeah.
I mean, she's still new to London.
2001, 2002. And the first thing I asked Julie was, is this your strategic plan, or did you have this handed down from you? And when she shared with me that it was hers, I was like, okay, this is somebody that I could work with. This is somebody who has a vision. This is somebody who has experience and is not afraid to push the boundaries a little bit. And I think she might like what I have to say.
Now, am I remembering correctly, she came to London from Nanaimo?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so she came all the way from the West Coast to join us here in London, and I'm recalling that she was really there through the challenges of COVID.
Yes. From what I understand, of course, I was at the Children's Museum still during those good old COVID days, which like really seemed like a crazy blur, being the only person in the building, kind of making sure that things were going, and then packing up play kits and bringing even more programming out to the community. I understand that Julie went through all of that too during COVID in a new organization as an executive director, which would have been a crazy feat.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been at Museum London since
October. So it's very, very new. I started in October, and I was really nervous at first. I figured there's going to be a huge learning curve. And it's really been quite fun and quite interesting. No surprise to me, but Julie has just fully embraced my experience and my leadership and has really let me run with a lot of these new initiatives. So implementing some visitor experience feedback and really getting to know the community and understanding why do people go to Museum London and what purpose, and I know that it's a purpose that served well, but why are you there and what are you getting out of it? So, and amplifying that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so coming into Museum London from the Children's Museum, what surprised you?
Grown-ups don't like to play.
Dude.
Grown-ups don't know how to play anymore. So, of course, like, believe it or not, the Children's Museum is a collecting museum and has care for over thousands and thousands of artifacts, and a collections team that does a really good job of taking care of those pieces, but everything is accessible. So if you are interested about something, one of our collection team members could go in and take something out of the collection and bring it out with white gloves and explain, this is where this came from. This was donated.
And this is at Museum London?
No, this is at the Children's Museum.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So then at Museum London, it's very different. The entire underground area of that block is vaults. So the number of artifacts that we have underground that are not seen by the general public go far beyond any amount of exhibitions that could be hosted at Museum London. So they really do take the stance of preservation overall. They're really focused on the preservation of that history and those materials. And if I ever suggested that a child pick up an artifact, they would probably not be very happy with me. But I've been kind of introducing these ideas of having replica items so that you can get a concept of like the texture and the feel of things. And as much as we really need to discourage touching the actual art pieces, it really comes from a place of curiosity and not knowing how to interact in museums. So if we're able to provide them with some alternatives, hands-on, tactile, or activations in the space for something for busy bodies and busy hands to do, even as an adult, we can take joy out of that.
Absolutely. What's your favorite thing about the museum?
Oh, that's a great question. What I love most about Museum London would probably be the opportunities that I see having there. The events are really fun. So we have an event coming up. It's the biggest fundraising event. It's a partnership with the Unity Project. It's called Up With Art. Ticket sales actually went on sale today.
Yeah, this is the advance ticket.
Advance ticket sales. And proceeds are split between the Unity Project and Museum London. It's our biggest fundraiser. Most people don't know that Museum London is actually a registered charity. So it's a nonprofit organization that relies on donations as a big part of contributing revenue. But this upcoming fundraiser is going to be amazing. My very first winter launch party was a blast. And then I also look forward to our summer launch party. And it's summer launch party is everyone's welcome. There's a suggested donation at the door, but on June 5th, you can come on out, see the new exhibitions that are going to be taking place in the space, and it's a great evening. There'll be a bar, and obviously not as great as the Richmond, but there'll be a bar and options for enjoying art and music and entertainment.
Well, so at the Up With Art Arty Party, there is art on display that is available to be auctioned, and the auction actually opens up online early. And the idea of collecting, you know, can be an intimidating thing, but there are really so many opportunities to just bring art into your life. I mean, if it's an amazing poster that you saw and you just said, wow, I have to have that, I'm stealing it off the wall. Or some of Tom Dunphy's art that's on the other side, please don't steal any of that off the wall. Those are for sale. But the art auction is kind of a nice entry point to play with the idea of buying art in support of an important project, which is trying to alleviate some of the pain and challenge of homelessness.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you are an art enthusiast, collector, purchaser, and you start to see those bids creep up and you're like, okay, this is now out of my price range. I'm not really gonna be able to move forward with this purchase. Museum London Shop hosts all sorts of local artists from every type of medium, every type of genre of art. It is a great way to support local artists. The money goes back to the artists through Shop Museum London. You can check out a lot of the selection on the website, and it can be purchased all year round. So we have artists who are contributing to our shop on a regular basis, and then again, you're not competing with the bids, not saying that if you have the ability to bid and contribute to the fundraiser, that's amazing. But this specifically, if you're trying to enter into the art, you can get a piece for as little as, you know, $40, $50, all the way up to a couple of $1,000 right in the shop at Museum London.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Also, if you haven't been to Museum London before, or you you're not quite sure how to approach it, every last Sunday at 2 o'clock there is a guided tour, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So the guided tours, they're wonderful. They're volunteer run. So the tour guides in Museum London are these impeccable group of volunteers that have dedicated so much time to learning about the artists and the exhibitions that are available. They will take you through the current exhibitions and share with you. And I do recommend going to a guided tour. They're really wonderful. There's an exhibition called Ukatula, and I know a couple of my friends have seen it. It is just breathtaking. But when you hear the background and the story of why this exhibition has been so carefully curated and planned out in the way that it is, you get so much more from the experience. I found that I had an emotional response after being led through with the tour versus being able to experience it on my own. Because when you're on your own, you're kind of creating, and no way is the wrong way. You can go in and create your own assumptions and learn about things and read up on the didactics, but that curated tour adds a little bit more about the artist and about how the exhibition came to be.
Absolutely, and it's also one of those opportunities where there are no stupid questions at all, and so very often it happens to all of us, regardless of what your interaction with formal art may have or have not been. We all have that moment when we look at something and we're not getting it, and then we read the description, and sometimes even then we're still not getting it, because sometimes we talk to each other in art circles and we get into a language and a conversation that others listening who perhaps aren't accustomed to that conversation, we might as well be speaking an entirely other language. A guided tour is an opportunity to seriously, there are no stupid questions, figure this out. Tell me that story again. You told me a story at the coffee house. Tell me again.
I don't know.
Tell me again, Miss Jamie. It was about the Kent Mugman piece.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw my sister-in-law under the bus here a little bit, but I went over the Christmas holidays to the museum with my sister-in-law, who has not been to Museum London in quite some time. And right now, there is a beautiful Kent Munkman sculpture in the middle of the upper floor galleries. And she looked at it, she said, just give me a minute. And she looked at it, and essentially it is the nativity scene done with indigenous models, with indigenous faces. The baby is being held by Hudson's Bay blanket. There is a scene behind of residential schools with taking children from RCMP, and there's a lot of emotion there, a lot of feeling. If you're familiar with the 60s scoop, if you're familiar with Indigenous residential schools, but unfortunately, Sonia didn't know about these things or wasn't connecting the dots. She definitely knows about these things, but she wasn't necessarily connecting the dots, and she was sitting there and she was like, I just don't get it. And that was a safe space for her and I to have a conversation about these topics and about this artist and about why he chooses to use a replica face in every single one of his paintings, in every single one of his sculptures of Indigenous people, to reflect the way that they have shown up traditionally in standard museums, where it's one face fits all. And that's just not the way it is in Indigenous culture. So it was a great way for us to have a very honest and open conversation about a very tough topic. And I think that right now we aren't being safe enough as community members and as as leaders to allow these conversations to come into our heart from folks that just genuinely don't know and that are afraid to ask the questions. And I just think, be brave, ask the questions. The more that you want to know to find out about these hot topics in our community, in our history, the more that we can spread awareness and actually work on truth and reconciliation. So without having that courage to have those hard conversations, we're not going to get very far. People are going to shut down.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you told me that story about Kent Mugman, I was not familiar with his work. So I looked it up, and now I'm a huge Kent Mugman fan.
Huge.
There was a big show here in, 2018, 2019, and so now I want to know more. So there's absolutely no sin in not knowing. Get that curiosity out there. And what remains when we're all dust? How do we know about the ancient Egyptians? What remains? What remains is our art, the things that can withstand time. When you go into the caves in France at Lascaux, and I don't know that I'll ever see that in my lifetime, but I just can't imagine how amazing it was for the person who first discovered those cave paintings that told the stories of ancient humans. Our stories. And when we're dust, that's why art's important. It's not just something for rich people. It's not just something to pass the time. It's not just something to decorate your house and match your sofa. It's none of those things. It's our culture. It's our very language and culture. And that's what gets left behind. And so it is an important thing. And that's why we support art. So, on that note, I'm going to open up the floor to some Q&A.
I got one written down already.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, it's a heavy one. Okay, what are your thoughts on the London, Ontario Art Collective considering the rich history of art, science, politics, etc.?
The London Art Collective. Okay, yeah. Who asked this question?
Just,
are you okay with me?
Yep. Yes, my name is Alan
Mikhail. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
Good, good, good. So when you're referring to the London Art Collective, are you talking about the arts institutions in London that are kind of lurking behind the scenes to spread?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Not so much of the art itself coming out of London, but the collective of the gathering of the archives, like you said, underneath the museum itself. That's a collection that's probably one of the base collections in North America, from my understanding.
Yes, you're right. So alongside not just collecting, so that's the other, I'm really glad that you asked this question. It's not just about collecting for the sake of holding on to. There is a art restoration company that rents space out of the basement of Museum London right next to the biggest vault. And we have a partnership agreement with this restoration company, and they actually work on preservation of these pieces. So we aren't just holding things for the sake of holding them. We also have regular rotation. So I would say that we're always working on the next exhibition. So that art is getting changed out and brought back into the public space on a very regular basis. There's also a big rental program. So in order to host art and artifacts from other museums, you have to have a certain standard within your operational envelope. So that's where I come in here. Making sure that your humidity levels, your temperature levels are all within range. And then you are able to share and share art out, but also have art come in from other institutions. So we may have that art on hand, but it often gets sent out. We currently have an exhibition, I believe, in one of the art museums in Montreal that the executive director just visited over March break. And she said it was just so amazing to walk in and to see the artifacts that came from Museum London in Montreal. So it's not just about holding on to these things, it's about being able to share them with a greater community. But with that, with the transportation, with the rehanging of art, comes preservation. And we have a responsibility as a museum and as an art institution to preserve the pieces that we are responsible for. So I don't know if that answers your question completely, but I do see a lot of work happening within the collective that is supporting the use of those pieces in a meaningful way that still preserves their integrity. Awesome.
Any other questions? Well then, let's, Mr. Jones, yes.
So, the question I have is like, is looking at how to sort of preserve and steward the arts community long into the future, and organizations, I mean artists, even individual artists deal with this, and musicians as well, many of them rely on funding, outside funding to preserve and fortify their livelihoods and their careers. But that comes into question when we've got change of governments and, you know, times are tough and funding gets removed, and then organizations are really struggling to sort of know what to do. I know myself as an artist, I've always tried to avoid the funding paradigm because it does leave me vulnerable to, you know, someone sitting in an office somewhere deciding whether they're going to approve your application for that year or not. So I guess my question is, are there things that Museum London's doing that, I mean, getting, you know, fundraisers are great,
yeah,
and there's probably grants and whatnot, but
mm-hmm.
Are there sort of more, I guess, private industry initiatives that or non-traditional ways of that the museum can raise money?
This is a very timely question. So, the head of, he is the CEO of the Business of Commerce of London, okay? His name's Graham. Yes, he has just recently wrote a series of LinkedIn posts about how the arts community affects our economy. Have you seen these?
No, but yeah, I understand Graham's philosophy.
Yes, yes. So he has been a huge advocate for arts communities as a large component to our revenue stream as an entire city. Not just as, so this is the one thing that, no offense, but because we've just been designated a UNESCO city, there is so much music funding right now. Like there is music funding out the ears. And I've had conversations with folks where music can be funded with just simple applications, and they have people who they've hired to even help artists write those applications. But unfortunately, in the arts world and in the museum sector, it really depends on whether or not governments buy in. Right now, municipally, there is a little bit of pressure on the downtown revitalization project. If I go as one organization to those city-run meetings that are about to start in April, and I start advocating for more focus on upkeep of these art institutions in downtown London, I'm just one little squeaky wheel. But when I have someone like Graham in my back pocket or on my team, not my back pocket, that's the worst way I could explain that, but on my team who can advocate and can say, this is good for our economy. Having arts-minded people doing what they're doing is good for our economy. Having this new children's museum built is good for our economy. Having music live at the Richmond Tavern every single night is good for our economy. Having a wonderful institution down the road that is free admission that you can visit 6 days a week is good for our economy. So I really appreciate that question. I know that it's really challenging politically. It's a crummy climate at the moment, and we're all kind of bracing for it. But when we have champions like the CEO of Chamber of Commerce of London, we need to embrace those champions, and we need to elevate their voices so that they can help us make some movement down at City Council.
That's great. And part of my point is, in some ways, all the money going into music is actually, it's kind of a it's an artificial stimulus of it. My question is, what happens when that is removed? You know, so in some ways, the arts community doesn't have the same amount of funding. Just like you're saying about having to innovate, you know, and find other ways to use the imagination. So, it is good to get the funding like the music community is getting, but my question is, what happens when that's no longer there? And sometimes what happens is it creates a false economy that when it's no longer there, then it leaves the community vulnerable because they haven't made, plans for not being self-sufficient.
From my perspective, that can be challenging. If you've applied for X grant and you're accustomed to getting X grant, and then in the next cycle, that grant doesn't come in. I used to face that. I made a big, long chunk of my career traveling to juried exhibitions. We had to compete. We had to apply. We were fortunate to get in, and to get in on our merit, and there's the jury, you get in, but the time that you don't, and your whole year's business is viewed, it isn't gonna happen because you're not going to that particular fair to see the clients that you've become accustomed to seeing. Yeah. You do have to scramble, and you do have to get creative. I don't see the public funding of arts as so much of a frivolous thing or a waste or anything like that. But when business people recognize that the arts are generators, the arts deserve funding because that funding gets that artist or that organization that much further down the road, and then they contribute in their way, and it's like the Richmond Tavern. Here we are, all getting together. InsideOutsideLondon.ca. Part of it is talking about what's available to us, and it becomes an ecosystem that feeds itself, that brings awareness, and the money spreads around.
I think what you're describing, which is good, like the fundraiser. Sorry if I'm going on here.
No.
I'm just really curious. It's because I think it's more sustainable when it's a grassroots funding. Like if it comes from private and public donations from the community. I'm just trying to safeguard creative communities from, once again, when administrations change, if it's a top-down funding, you know, and then it becomes subject to, say, what happens to be, you know, a certain, you know, topic of the times, but as soon as they change, then, you know, but if it comes from the grassroots up.
Well, that's why it's really important for us all to advocate from the grassroots up. We lived in San Antonio for a long time. There's a term called resguache in the Latino community, and that comes from the idea of making something beautiful from absolutely nothing. Being so poor that you have nothing. If your car breaks, you're not going to take it to the mechanic. You're going to fix it. What part? Oh, make a part. What if you've traveled, you very often see cultures outside of the very wealthy culture that we realistically happen to live in. You have to make something from nothing, and so that spirit and the get it done that we saw in San Antonio, because it was a minority-majority city, that came into the arts. That it's like, we're going to make it happen. The people up here, you know, running the museums and, you know, and all the white people and the, you know, and, oh, no, you know, you come in the back door. That was very much a part of things down south for a really long time. But when you see that spirit of the people who say, I'm lifting up, I'm going to make something amazing. So always considering, fast forward to 2025, we all have a place at the table. Quite honestly, and in order to continue to be creative, we need to continue to take that place at the table.
To add to what you're saying, Tammy, I just want to say from a grants perspective, because from what Tammy's saying, yes, you can create something out of nothing, but that doesn't mean that you aren't also able to dip into the pie that is currently available. And when you dip into that pie, start making your exit strategy. Okay, so if you've got a pocket of funding, so coming from profits and charities, we often get starter money. So it has to be a new initiative and you have to prove how you're going to make it sustainable. So when you get that funding allocation, you want to start looking at that and thinking, what am I going to do with this money to make sure that I can carry on this project? And yeah, it's great to get a big chunk of money right up the front, but that's not going to do you any good, as you mentioned, next year when you don't get that money. So figure out how that's going to make you more sustainable. Does that mean now, okay, you need another band member? Does that mean you need a van to get you to different gigs? Figure out how to work that funding to make the best that you can make for what you're providing the community, and that will make you sustainable.
Okay, I think we're going to draw things to a close. Right. I'm getting a signal from our happy stage manager.
Hands up, get her off.
Jamie, thank you for being a part of this.
You're welcome.
This is just one of the best first times I've ever had.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you, Jamie. You really, really shine.